Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi everyone, this is Ian Morris, and for personal reasons, Nate is away this week and next, so I've got something special for you in the form of 2 text message State of Podcasting episodes, one today and one next weekend, and then the show will resume as normal in that first week of April. If you're one of our patrons backing us at patreon.com/UKTech, thank you again. You won't be charged for these 2 special shows. These are irregular, and billing will resume again once we're back in the first week of April. Hopefully you'll stick with us and be here for us to resume in a couple of weeks. Thanks to all of our new backers, including John, Jamie, Rich, Jacob, and Mike this week. It's great to have you with us. This week's State of Podcasting was recorded a couple of weeks ago by Nate, who wanted to learn a little bit more about the tech podcasting scene in France. It's a fascinating recording and I think you'll love it. And next week, we'll be joined by 2 women doing intriguing things by blending podcasting with wedding photography. I'll be here to introduce that one too, but for now, I'll hand you over to Nate and his interview.
Hello everybody and welcome to another State of Podcasting episode. These are the episodes where we go behind the scenes with a podcaster or somebody involved in podcasting to try and work out how the world of podcasts is evolving. And this week, I'm very excited to be joined by Patrick Bejar. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Nate.
No problem at all. Now, I'm hoping on this episode, one of the things that we're going to learn a bit more about is the state of podcasting in France. Patrick has run a number of podcasts, is a professional podcaster and runs a very popular, successful French language technology show, Le Rendezvous Tech. And I'm hoping we can go behind the scenes a little bit and find out a bit more about that. But first, Patrick, just let us know kind of what does the landscape of your podcasting empire look like at the moment? Tell us what you're up to.
So first of all, I can't even believe that the phrase "he's a professional podcaster" is actually accurate. It's been so many years that I've been doing this, and I guess we'll get into it a little bit later. But hearing people say about me, "he's a professional podcaster," is always kind of a weird moment. So the shows I do, I cover mainly technology and gaming. I do so in French and English in shows I produce myself and guest on. The ones I produce, I have one gaming and one tech bi-monthly shows, so twice a month, basically every 2 weeks. That bi-monthly is very weird in English.
Yes.
And those sort of alternate to give people one a week of a long form, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours show for each topic. And then I have one about apps recommendations, which is really just an excuse for my friends and me to get together and spew nonsense. And one is cultural products recommendation, like movies, books, TV shows, comics, all of that, that also is bi-monthly. I really like the bi-monthly format for some reason. And then in English, because I also do a couple of shows in English, are one about gaming as well, and one about international news, I guess. I think it's a little bit hard to explain, but what I do is that I get people from different countries, varied backgrounds and cultures, and we get together and comment on the world's events, hopefully from our different cultures' perspectives. So in one show, we might get someone from France, someone from the US, someone from Saudi Arabia, someone from Thailand. And, you know, we discuss what has been making the headlines in the past month and stuff like that. So quite an array of different topics I cover.
Yeah, absolutely. And over the course of a month, I think I counted 4, possibly 5 separate programs.
Total, it's 6, that I produce, and I then guest on 1, 2, 3, 3 and maybe more, but yeah, roughly that's about it.
I see. So a roster of 10 basically full-time podcasts, which is, you know, a hell of a lot more than a lot of people, but that's one of the key things that has allowed you, I think, to be this professional podcaster. This is your full-time job, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, which is interesting, is that I had actually been doing this maybe a little bit less, but for a very long time, and I already had a full-time job on top of it. So basically, when I switched from my full-time job to doing this full-time, it was almost like, you know, I was doing a full-time job and then half a job on the side, which was my podcasting efforts. And so when I dropped the full-time job, I increased the amount of activity, of course, for the podcasting, but that meant I had less work rather than more. It's still a lot of work, of course, but I was on the verge of a burnout, I think, before.
Yeah. And what was the time frame when you sort of left that full-time job to go full 100% full-time podcasting? How long ago was that?
So I started podcasting in 2006 as a hobby. So as we said, it was a while ago. Then I stopped my full-time job in 2014.
Do you mind telling us what you were doing?
Oh, sure. I was a PR manager at Blizzard Entertainment in Europe.
Oh, wow.
So in a gaming company. And that was a job I actually found via my podcasting efforts, because my first big show, my first show was about the game World of Warcraft, which Blizzard develops. So I made contacts within the community team and the PR team there. And when they were looking for someone, my previous job, which was in the movie industry, was teetering out. Things weren't as active as they once were. They were looking for someone and they thought of me. And the first time I said, no, I'm good. The second time I was like, well, I don't have a job anymore, so let's go for it. And it was great. It was a great experience. And I did that for about 5 years. And then in 2014, I left to become a full-time podcaster. So it's been a little bit over 2 years.
Brilliant. So let's talk a bit about Le Rendezvous Tech, your French language technology show. I'd love to learn a little bit about some of the topics you cover on the show and whether you're covering only French technology companies or global tech, but simply for a French speaking audience. Sort of tell us a little bit about how you structure that and what the focus is there.
Yeah, so we definitely don't only cover French tech. We cover it a little bit, but it's not the focus of the show, I would say. The idea of the show, which might be, you know, the same as many others, but my guiding principle is that I try to do a show that if you listen to it every 2 weeks, you will get an understanding of everything important that happens in tech in the world. And not only just getting the news, of course, but also getting a little bit of context and a little bit of analysis. And that is the way I look at how I get the show together every 2 weeks. My goal is that if you listen to the show, then you don't need to scour the websites that you usually look at every day, you know, refresh every page of 5 blogs 5 times a day to get what's happening. You just listen to the show and you know the most important thing. So obviously we don't talk about everything. And when there's French stuff happening, of course we discuss it, maybe more than if I was an American or any other country person. But it's not our focus, no.
I see. But it does sound like you will occasionally spend some time focusing on something that is actually quite homegrown and local.
Oh, yeah, of course. I would say, you know, maybe between, you know, different episodes, it might be anywhere between 30 and 50% of the show, which is French. Sometimes if there's a big thing happening in the country, some, you know, mass surveillance law or something like that, we'll have a big debate about it, of course.
I see. And so more broadly speaking, I'm curious to learn a little bit more about what the French podcasting scene is like. And I'm also curious of whether you have something of a captive audience or whether there are lots of French language shows and you're sort of competing with them locally as well as globally.
I think the scene is quite vibrant. There are a lot of podcasters. There are a lot of people interested in podcasting. So for myself, I started this show in 2009. So it's been running for a while. And I think initially, a lot of the people that came to it came from my original show about World of Warcraft. And well, guess what? They were also big geeks. So many of them were interested in tech. So I don't know that I have a captive audience. I think the community is being fostered in a very positive way, so that definitely makes a core audience of active people who enjoy the show and support it. So I think there's a healthy audience, I guess, is the way I would put it for my show. Yeah. For other shows, there are, as I said, many independent shows. But I think the French landscape is starkly divided. I don't know if it's the same elsewhere, but there's a lot of radio replay podcasting, basically shows that air on the radio that the radio stations put up as podcasts then on, you know, iTunes and everywhere. So there are a lot of people who listen to that. And if you go to the iTunes rankings, which remain the main way to know anything about podcasting these days, you will see that most of the time, the majority of the top ranked podcasts are those big media shows.
But then that's certainly the same in Britain as well. And initially, that used to frustrate me quite a lot because it sort of felt that the charts weren't a fair playing field. You know, the likes of BBC Radio 1 and broadcasters like Chris Moyles and similar people, they're always going to be taking those top spaces because they have the huge national reach. Whereas podcasters, I mean, much larger than mine still, but including mine, would struggle to hit those heights because you just can't reach. But actually, what I now think is that it's allowed more people to discover the concept of what podcasting is, i.e. free to subscribe, syndicated, spoken word content, and that overall that's probably good for the industry in the long run rather than remaining a very niche thing just for, you know, for us geeks who like to listen to audio in that way.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it as well. It is definitely frustrating when, you know, you are drowned in a sea of multi-million dollars or pounds or francs or euros. Well, francs. Wow. Okay. I don't know where that came from.
History.
But yeah. And maybe the future as well, which is worrisome. So where that came from is, anyway. So, it was the same feeling for me, but I guess the ultimately our opportunity is that we are on the same level. We are on a level playing field regarding access, right? Anyone can. It's just like a website, whether it's a blog or the New York Times. If someone knows your URL, they will get access to you. Whereas 20 years ago, if you needed to access some spoken word anything, you needed someone to be providing it with, you know, millions of dollars of antennas and hardware and authorizations and all of this. So I do manage to pop up in those rankings when a popular show is released, then it comes back down. We are featured regularly by the iTunes editorial team, which is a great help. But ultimately, I think the most important thing is that I don't think I need, a million listeners or whatever it is. I think, if I get a million listeners, I'll be very happy, especially if they go all to they all go to Patreon and support the show financially. But the idea is that usually, I think when shows get that level of audiences, it means that you have to cater to the masses. And that's not what I want to do. I want to do the show that I want to do for the type of people that want to listen to it.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want to have to, you know, dumb down some. And you know, I try to educate people on some important tech issues. So I explain things, definitely. But I like to think I never dumb it down. And I think if I were to reach those levels, it, in order to do it, I would need to dumb things down and to make things shorter. And, you know, And I don't want to do that. So I think it's fine that, of course, those that do that are going to get more listeners, or, you know, maybe they're going to cover different, more entertaining or more popular topics. But I've come to accept it. I don't really mind even. I don't think I ever minded. I'm just happy that I can do this and find some success and make a living out of it. You know, that I can't remember who said that all you need to make a living out of your passion is 1,000 true fans. I can't remember who it was, but
it's believable. It's certainly believable.
Yeah, it's very true. You know, if you have 1,000 people that will buy everything you put out or support you via some crowdfunding platform, then of course you need to be sure you do things properly. Like, I'm not going to start hiring 15 people to run the network. It would be a very different thing if I did. But if I get those 1,000 true fans, then I can support myself, and that's already a huge benefit for me.
Yeah.
Now, again, of course, if I did get a lot more fans and a lot more money and a lot more everything, I wouldn't be unhappy. But I guess I don't want to be doing what those huge radio stations are doing. If I did, then I would go do that.
Well, speaking of sort of the masses and appealing to the masses, you know, in Britain, certainly comedy and sport podcasts are exceptionally popular. And I was curious, and more recently, true crime as well. And I was curious if you knew of this being similar in France. Are you sort of up against those sorts of guys in the rankings?
You know, I'm not even certain. I just launched the iTunes podcast section, so I'm going to look at the rankings, and it does seem like comedy is indeed the most popular one. Yeah, the most popular one are. There's a lot of comedy, definitely. I don't see as much sports, which is surprising. I would have thought that sports was also very much very popular, but I don't see many of them.
I presume that the ones you're looking at are predominantly French language?
Yes, absolutely. On the French store, there's only French language shows.
Interesting.
I mean, there the others are available, but the in the rankings, anyone that has anything visible is French.
One of the things I remember on a very old show, I think it might even have been on one of your appearances on Tom's show, on Daily Tech News show, that somebody had once told you that they were not French, but they were learning to speak French, and they found that listening to your show was helpful to their learning because they knew the topics you were talking about, but so they could pick, you know, put together sentences and things, but they were still using it as a way of understanding the language. And I'm curious if you've heard that on multiple occasions.
Yeah, there's been a few people that have been mentioning this, and it always makes me very happy. A lot of people often say that the subject matter is familiar, so that helps my voice. Many of them are listeners of some of the shows I do in English as well, so that also helps, I suppose. And it's great. I love it. I mean, it's not the majority of people, but it's enough that it actually makes an appearance here and there in my Twitter feed or, you know, Facebook somewhere every once in a while. And I think it's great. I think more people should do it. Come on over and learn French that way.
And I think it's interesting that could apply to other languages as well, that if you have a close familiarity with a topic and you recognize companies or certain terminology which aren't using words in that local language, that actually podcasting could be a very interesting language learning tool. And it's free as well, so there are no barriers.
Yeah, for sure.
So I know you live in Finland and you podcast in French, and I think as well you're a regular visitor to Japan. I'm curious whether you've learned anything about the local podcasting scenes in either of those two countries.
So yeah, I split my time between Finland and France, and yes, I've been to Japan quite a few times. Honestly, I'm not sure. Japan, I don't quite know. Finland, there is a little bit, but I don't think there's as much as there is in France. For some reason, France has a very active podcasting life and podcasting scene and tech life in general. I mean, if we go to the US or the UK, I think it's obvious. Everyone does it. But But outside of France, it's of course it exists. There might be, you know, a few people from Finland or any other country that are going to listen to this and say, oh, what are you talking about? We have lots of podcasts here. And I've definitely met podcasters from, you know, other regions, other countries and other languages. But for example, one thing that surprises me is that I come across a lot of people from France in the tech scene in the U.S., not so much from, I don't know, you know, Spain or Germany or these kinds of countries. So I don't know if it's that they're less active, less tech savvy, or if it's just the fact that I don't see them. It's very possible. But I've very rarely had people contact me, for example, and say, hey, I'm a podcaster from Spain, and would you like to come on my show, or, you know, would you like to do something together or something like that. It's happened on rare occasions, but mostly it's been English speaking and French.
I see. I mean, certainly one of the things that I've noticed, you know, you and I share a shared interest in Japan, and I listen to a few podcasts about Japan, but they're predominantly hosted by expats living in the region. So it's been quite difficult to get an English language show about Japan hosted by somebody who is natively Japanese but speaking English. It seems to be that that's one of the trends of podcasting in Japan, for example, that I've noticed.
Yeah, I don't know why I never thought to go to the Japanese iTunes store. Maybe I'll do that now and report on it, because there should be podcasts. I mean, they love their phones there, and I'm sure they have a lot of time in the subway. So,
yeah, it's certainly a topic I'd love to explore on a future episode somehow. So let's talk a little bit about Patreon. You mentioned it very briefly earlier, and obviously like my show Text Message very recently, you're supported directly by your fans on Patreon. And from the numbers I've seen and the time you've been doing it looks like it's doing really well. So I'm curious how that is working for you and whether you feel like it's got a sustainable momentum.
I definitely think so. I hope I'm not wrong, but yeah, it looks like it's sustainable. It's been 2 years now, and with dips here and there, it's been stable or growing-ish. I mean, mostly it's stable, but it's not dipping. And I think whenever some people fall off, because of course no one is going to support you forever, some other people find the show and find it valuable enough after a few months or a year or two that they want to support it. So it's been treating me really well, and I feel extremely lucky and fortunate and happy of the way it's worked. I don't know how reproducible it is for others, but even in France, I think the difference between me and other people is that I'm architecturing everything to make this a supporting income. I'm not spending too much money. I'm only working myself on all of this, you know, as a regular producer, host, everything. I have, of course, co-hosts that come here and there. I'm starting to try and pay them a little bit, but not as much as I would like to. But yeah, there are other podcasters or content creators on YouTube and such who are using those crowdfunding platforms in France as well, but very few are making the jump. And yeah. And they're managing to bring in some good amount of money that if they did it full time, I think would support them. But the thing that really worked out was when I said, you know, I launched the Patreon maybe 3 years ago, almost 2.5 years ago. And initially it was just a way to just give me a little bit of extra cash. And it worked really well. And I figured, well, maybe, it was maybe $500 an episode, which was great. And I thought maybe there's a way to make a living out of it. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to quit. And I quit. And then I told people, hey guys, I quit. Would you support me? Which is the completely wrong way to do it, wrong order to do it. And the fact that I said, you know, I'm going to do this full time. And I was the first one in France to do that as well. It really got people to think, yeah, I want to support that guy. And it came a lot faster than I thought it would. So very happy overall.
Great. And were there any particular challenges you experienced in converting a French or more broadly European audience to paying for podcasts?
You know, it's all impressions, but I think from what I know from other people, the English language shows get a much higher rate of conversion than the French ones, from what I know. And I think it might have to do with the fact that in the US especially, I don't know if it's the case in the UK, but people are used to giving money to, you know, charities and PBS and supporting stuff. In France, since we're a lot more, you know, on the left side of the political spectrum, people are used to spending a lot of money in taxes. So it's sort of embedded in the government and the way of life that the things that need supporting, even if in the case of the government, you know, it's going to be schools and hospitals, are being taken care of by the government and through your taxes. So people give less money, I think, to other things. In, you know, it's how we're wired. So my conversions are, you know, a fraction of the conversion that some other shows see.
I see.
So, but yeah.
And how do you see the podcast industry in general? This isn't necessarily specific to France, but obviously any French examples would be great. Just how you see the industry changing over the next 3 years or so, if there are any trends you've picked up on?
It's really hard to predict, you know, for podcasts. The thing is, podcasts are a complete anomaly in the world of tech. You know, in tech, usually, when things get popular, they either stay super popular and become huge, or they bubble and they bust. And podcasting had a bubble bust moment. People thought it had a bubble bust moment a few years ago, maybe in 2009, 2010. Podcasting started being really noticed. And people thought, oh, this is going to replace radio. This is the future. And there was even some people who thought video was going to work like that before YouTube became as big as it is now. And then some people kind of lost interest and they thought podcasting had got away, which is why when Serial came out a few years ago, very, very successful podcast, people thought, oh my God, podcasts are back. And it really annoyed some of my friends who have been podcasting for a long time. It didn't.
Yeah, I would be one of those people.
Yeah, it didn't bother me. I think they were saying, you know, podcasts, I'm sure you said that as well, podcasts had never gone away. But yep. to the large public, it did. It had gone away. But the reality is, podcasts didn't go huge or bust. Podcasts have been steadily climbing, progressing for 10 years now. And that's unheard of in the world of tech. Something that remains popular but progresses, gains ground a little bit more every year. It's weird. And now, honestly, when I started, maybe even, let's say, 5 years ago, when I said I'm doing podcasts, I had to explain to normal people what a podcast was. Now, when I say, well, I do podcasts, and I start explaining, they're like, yeah, I know podcasts. And like they're offended that I would explain it to them. So over the next 3 years, 3 to 5 years, I don't know. But I think it's going to keep progressing. I think one thing that could make it explode would be if Apple were to allow listeners to subscribe to a podcast, you know, optionally, to pay to support a podcaster. There were a few things that were said in recent weeks about Apple, like officials saying, we have things planned for podcasts and we don't know what those are. They might be minor, but if the financial support is in their plans, it might be significant. It might be significant for podcasters. So we'll have to see how things go. But aside from that, you know, it's weird. Podcasts is more of it's embedding itself in the media landscape of the internet. And I don't think it's going to change much over the next 3 years. More and more people are going to be, you know, able to live off of it. But aside from that, I think it's just going to coast along.
Well, it's interesting because my last question was going to be to ask you what the industry or some of the bigger players could do in your view to sort of help podcasting sort of reach the next level and explode. And you actually folded that answer without me even asking it into your previous question. So I'm actually, yeah. I'm not going to ask that question and double up on the answer there. But it's a really couple of very interesting points. And certainly, I think if Apple does do something like that, it'll raise a number of interesting questions, but certainly create a lot of opportunities yeah. that certainly I would be very excited about.
I think there might be one other thing which, you know, would come out of left field. There could be someone who finally cracks the universal podcast catalog or destination that would help. Like if there was, I don't know, podcastemporium.com that became the place where everyone goes to get their podcasts. Currently, it's Apple's iTunes, of course, but as we know, Apple only plays nice with Apple products. So if there was the YouTube of podcasting, and many have tried, and I don't want this to become proprietary in any way, but one focal point to get people to discover and find and enjoy podcasts would I think, help somehow. But even, you know, today you said reach a wider audience. I think the audiences are already huge. Everyone, I mean, there are many, many, many people who use different apps on their phones, but it's so spread out that it's hard to get some unified momentum behind it. Some kind of unifying force could help, but the strength is also that there's a lot of, you know, it's very standards oriented and anyone can do it. So that's also difficult to reconcile. But
yeah. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. I've learned an awful lot and it's been incredibly interesting. So thank you ever so much for your time. Patrick Bejar, tell people where they can go to get started listening to some of your shows.
Sure. So for the French one, it's frenchspin.com. And for the English language ones, it's frenchspin. Oh, that's the other way around. frenchspin.fr for the French ones and frenchspin.com for the English ones. And of course, on Twitter, you will find links to all of this. I'm not Patrick on Twitter. It's very easy. Not Patrick. It's like Patrick, but with not in front of it.
Absolutely. Brilliant. And you have a Patreon as well, I believe. What's the URL for that if people want to check that out?
Yeah, I mean, there's patreon.com/rdvtech and patreon.com/thephileasclub. But, you know, listen to the shows first and see if you like them before then rushing to the Patreons and supporting me, which you should absolutely do.
Patrick Bejar, thank you so much.
Thanks, Nate.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.